Insofar as a celebration of solemnities goes, this celebration of the solemnity of Christ the King is a relative newcomer to the Church's calendar. It was established in 1925 by Pope Pius XI, and the year 1925 is significant in terms of world history, not because of the year itself, but because of the period in history in which this solemnity was established. If you can imagine, Europe was still undergoing reconstruction after the devastation of the First World War. And the many kingdoms and empires and principalities that had dominated the European continent for centuries were but a distant memory at this point. World War I not only brought tremendous destruction to the European continent, but an entire shift in power to the current nation state that we all know quite well. So Pope Pius XI wanted to assert this solemnity, not in an attempt to restore some semblance of some external kingdom that the Church perhaps once enjoyed in the days, for example, of the Papal States, but something perhaps some more fundamental. You see, Pope Pius XI realized that when bad ideas, bad understandings about the human person and who the human person is meets military force, devastating things can happen. All of the different isms that we know oh so well today found incarnational reality in the last century. Fascism, Nazism, communism, just to name a few. And so Pope Pius XI wanted to remind the entire world that unless Jesus Christ, the Son of the living God and the Lord of all history, is at the center of the human understanding of what it means to be a human person, then things will go awry and continue to go awry in the world. This is, in fact, at the very heart of the pontificate of John Paul II, our late Holy Father. He used to say often that Jesus Christ is the answer to the question that is every human life. I'll say that again. Jesus Christ is the answer to the question which is every human life. And Pope Pius XI was really prophetic. Look what happened less than 15 years after 1925, World War II. Then the Cold War. And all the different dictatorships and different tyrannical regimes that have sprouted up all over the world since that time. The 20th century was the bloodiest century in human history. More people were killed in the 20th century than in the previous 19 combined. The notions of weapons of mass destruction took their fruition in the 20th century. The world is a very, very different place. And what Pius XI understood, that without Jesus Christ recognized as the center and Lord of all history, and that he reveals to us what it means to be truly human, truly alive, the world will continue to spiral out of control. And so it has. Even look now when I talk to members of the greatest generation, those who fought during World War II. Every month, it seems, I bury another number of them at the cemetery. They're going very quickly. They say in some circles, in some parts of the country, 2,500 to 3,000 a day. And I often speak to them and I ask them about what it was like to grow up wherever they grew up in the United States during their time. I said, how do you compare it to now? So many of them shake their heads. Father, the experiment of America has gotten off track, gotten off the rails. It's not an America I understand or even recognize anymore. Things that are considered mainstream today were unthinkable years ago. Some of them even say, Father, it's not even a matter of style or trends. It's just a matter of fundamental truth about decency and the human person. Again, it is true, but Pius XI was right. Christ the King does not rule. And so even, for example, for Catholics who want to serve in public life, isn't it the inference today that you have to check your Catholicism at the door in order to sit on the Supreme Court bench? Isn't it in fact the case today that to be accepted in your party, you have to check your Catholic values in the office? But when you come to the floor to vote for laws of our land, we don't want to impose Catholicism on anyone under the guise of separating church and state. I mean, any person who's ever read the Constitution understands that that has nothing to do with the separation of church and state. That clause was included by our founders to protect the church from the state. Not the other way around. It was to make sure that no one religion dominated the public sphere, but it was not to say that religion and God were somehow to be privatized, somehow to be one's private experience. Pope Benedict XVI says so prophetically in our own times that the tyranny of the day isn't the Nazism or the communism or the fascism of some years past, but rather the soft tyranny of secularism, which at its heart is agnostic at best. It means that it recognizes that there is some higher power, but no personal God, and certainly not Jesus Christ. If you want to see clear evidence of the advance of secularism in our country, simply look back to Europe. There are always a generation ahead of us in degradation, and fashion too. But in degradation for sure. Did you know that 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when the European Union was crystallizing into its current form, every single Catholic who sat on the commission to draft the constitution for the European Union, who insisted that mention and recognition of the Catholic faith as being congruent with the rise of Western civilization in Europe, was absolutely ousted and removed, defrocked from that position, because they were too religious. Look at the European Union Constitution today. It makes no mention of Christianity, Jesus Christ, or the Catholic Church. And where would Europe be today without the Catholic Church? Without the Catholic Church, the world would be Protestants, because no one could protest against anything. But these are the times in which we live. These are the times where Jesus Christ is not honored as our King. Now the gospel today that we're presented with really shows us a very different aspect of Christ's reign. It seems perhaps to some odd. Why would the church present us with a gospel reading where the King of the universe, the Lord of all history, the Lord of Lords, is pinned to a cross, experiencing capital punishment? How do we say, then, that that is kingliness, kingship? And it's interesting because the good thief, traditionally known as Saint Dismas, he recognizes something very interesting about this Jesus of Nazareth, perhaps observing him from approximate distance, because they have been carrying their crosses up the Calvary together. Of course, in the Gospels, the evangelists highlight Jesus' carrying of his cross, but the same would have been true for the other prisoners that accompanied him. And many artistic depictions certainly confirm that tradition. This good thief says something very peculiar. Right? Jesus, when you come into your kingdom, remember me. I mean, what a thing to say, I mean, one of the oddest things to say in the moment of desperation, when you're moments from your death. What a tremendous conversion going on in the heart of this good thief, St. Dismas. It's very interesting because Jesus' response tells us something about his kingdom. I assure you, today you will be with me in paradise. The word paradise in English is taken from the Persian root of the word. And in Persian, paradise was equivocated with the garden of the king. It was a special honor to be invited to take a little walk with the king in his private garden. Many of the most important decisions in a kingdom were decided not in court, where there was a lot of courtship and the pageantry and the ears listening and the rumor mills working inside the castle or inside the fortress. But many of the real decisions, many of the real moments of decision-making and truth-telling occurred in one-on-one conversations as the king and the subject walked sometimes arm in arm in the privacy of a garden. Jesus reminds us, right, that the Garden of Eden is now soon to be replaced with the garden where the tomb was, the gateway to paradise, where we all get to meet Jesus Christ one-on-one. And it's interesting because, you see, the kingdom of Jesus Christ is espousing, which Pope Pius XI recognized so well in his prophetic vision for why this solemnity is so necessary for the church's calendar, is simply this. The kingdom of God is not necessarily an exterior kingdom, a temporal kingdom, a material kingdom. Although, we would say that when it really reigns in the hearts of men, it will have exterior manifestations. The culture should reflect the fact that Jesus Christ reigns in the hearts of men. And to the degree that it does, that means the kingdom of God is within. And to the degree that it does not reflect Jesus Christ, we can say that it is absent. But in the end, the freedom that is being expressed by Jesus to this good thief lies in something like this. Keep in mind that the good thief knows that the person who most likely would have been crucified with him and the other thief was Barabbas. Remember Barabbas? The person that was traded out of the jail for Jesus? Ironically, Barabbas at this very moment in the gospel goes a free man, thanks to Jesus, the scapegoat. Jesus is crucified. He is pinned to a cross. But because Jesus has laid down his life for us, and because the good thief recognizes what has happened, Jesus and the good thief, even though they are physically pinned to a cross, are interiorly free. Because they've decided that triumph and glory comes not in self-fulfillment, but in dying to the self and making oneself a gift for the other. Therein lies the kingdom of God. You see, it means that no matter what type of exterior circumstances we may all be experiencing, separation, divorce, wayward children, children with deviant sexual orientations, all kinds of different maladies, addictions, you name it. No matter what we experience in this life, regardless of the external circumstances, each of us has the opportunity to experience the interior freedom that living in a state of grace, with a clear conscience, and in the law and light of Christ provides. It's why, for example, so many of the church's political prisoners throughout the world tell great stories of conversion during their moments of incarceration, because even though they were externally jailed by their captors, internally they were more free than their very persecutors. This is where the kingdom of God reigns. When a human person in the kingdom of their heart has decided that Jesus Christ will reign supreme, that they will put aside self-fulfillment for self-sacrifice, when they will open themselves to the love and law of Christ, the law of charity, then anything is possible. Then Christ reigns not only within, but in the public square. So Pope Pius XI was prophetic. Each of us ought to pray daily for this interior freedom, a freedom that no one can take away from us, only if we allow them to. This is the soft tyranny of secularism we fight today. And this is what we must resist at every front, so that the interior freedom that truly can be ours will be realized not only in this life, but in the next. O Mary, conceived without sin.